Betty Davis.
Hello. Tracy Larimer stood stiffly erect in the courtroom as the people filed out. He heard the minor explosion of a flash bulb and winced. Wouldn't they ever be through taking pictures of it? He wondered dully. He heard a man's voice muttering, miscarriage of justice. Heard a woman ask, how can he hold up his head? And he winced again and turned to his lawyer, who was gathering up papers and stuffing them into a briefcase.
Well, you won the case, Briggs. I'm a free man. Free, unattached, and 29.
Oh, there was never any doubt in my mind. I knew we'd win.
Well, the verdict was unpopular. There weren't any shouts of approval. There wasn't any hand clapping.
You're in a bad house. The show will close before the week's out.
The show's closed as of now. The star's retiring, Briggs, from the stage. I was innocent, you know. I wasn't within miles of that place.
Your car was. A policeman took down your license number.
My car was stolen.
And the thief conveniently returned it before morning and left it in front of your door.
He knew he'd killed a man. He knew he'd be in for a manslaughter charge, to say the least, if they caught him in that car. He was forced to return it.
And you hadn't any alibi for the whole night. To all intents and purposes, you were out in your car, drunk perhaps, going against lights, completely incapable of stopping your car when that farmer stepped out in front of you.
You make it sound as if I were guilty. Even though you got me free, you make me sound guilty.
I know. But remember that your stupid maid blurted out that there was something red on your shoe the following morning. Now, that something red might have been blood. You sent the shoe out to be cleaned.
I stepped on that something as I walked down the street. It squashed under my foot. It was the broken half of a lipstick, a cheap lipstick. It left a red smudge on my shoe. Naturally, I sent the shoe out to be cleaned. You believe that, don't you?
Of course. And you're free. But you must admit that the story sounds very phony.
Yeah. Yeah, as phony as some of my friends. All of them ready to believe the worst. When I get home, there'll be a big pile of telegrams from my friends congratulating me because I got away with something. Because I had enough money to retain you. I didn't kill the man, I tell you. The car was in front of my house when I went for a walk. It was in front of my house when I came back. I just... Why am I going on like this?
Why, indeed. Case is closed. You know, it was the blood on the fender that clinched things. Now, why would a man take the trouble to have his shoes cleaned and leave blood on a fender? Oh, well, there's no reason to stand here in an empty courtroom and yak. Oh, want to come to the club and have a bite of lunch?
I hope I never have to see food again for the rest of my life. I hope I never have to see people again for the rest of my life. Why did I go for a long walk that night? It's the big, fat laugh of the century. I had a toothache. I wanted to walk until it was almost time to go to the dentist. It was a wisdom tooth.
The jury smiled when I told that story. Ironic, isn't it? Well, you don't want to go to lunch with me, and where do you want to go?
That's just it. Where do I want to go? Where would you want to go if you'd had your picture plastered all over the front pages of every paper in the city? Where does a man go when the finger of suspicion's pointing at him? What's the next step?
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back again. But first...
You save for the future and help your country too when you step up and join the payroll savings plan. Always remember, it's a proud way to say, take stock in America, buy U.S. savings bonds.
Saving for the down payment on almost anything is as easy as joining the payroll savings plan. Just tell your pay office to set aside a certain amount of each paycheck in United States savings bonds. Savings bonds keep growing at a guaranteed rate, and it won't take long to save enough for that down payment on a dream home of your own. Buy bonds through the payroll savings plan. It really pays.
So always remember, it's a proud way to save. Take stock in America. Buy U.S. savings bonds.
And now back to our story with Betty Davis.
The lawyer patted Tracy on the back and said he was making mountains out of molehills and that people soon forget. They went out of the courtroom together. They parted company in front of the building with a brief handshake. And Tracy took a cab to the apartment house in which he lived. And the lawyer went back to his office and to another case. His young assistant, one Lewis Saxon, asked an eager question, and the lawyer shrugged.
To tell the truth, Lou, I'm not sure the guy was innocent. But on the other hand, they couldn't prove him guilty. You did a fine job in those precedents, boy. I'm proud of you.
Tracy bought a newspaper on his way home. His picture taken from a bad angle leered up at him. Was it his mustache that made him look vicious, or was it the way in which the photographer had used light and shadow? He didn't read the story. He knew it by heart. The victim was a farmer who had come to the city on business, a man with an invalid wife and a daughter. The wife had been too ill to attend the trial. The daughter had stayed home with her mother. Tracy tossed the paper aside, and 10 minutes later he was shaving off his mustache. Next, he put on some old clothes and took a cab to the railroad station. And at dusk, he was walking across the platform of a small depot. He was pausing beside a jalopy with the word taxi painted on it.
Where to, mister?
The Duncan place.
Okay. I've driven lots of folks up there lately. You one of them newspaper fellas?
No, just a man who's looking for work.
You're going to the wrong place. Duncan's haven't got a nickel to spare. No, sirree. It was work, day in and day out for Wesley Duncan, just to make both ends meet and keep his invalid wife in medicine. And his daughter is not what you'd call rugged. Oh, the whole township took it hard when the man that killed him was acquitted.
Maybe the man didn't kill him. Maybe he told the truth. Maybe the verdict was honest and fair.
Oh, see any gray in my eye? Oh, sure. I wasn't born yesterday. Well, get in. We'll be on our way. No sense standing here talking, but... if you think Mrs. Duncan or Meg Duncan is going to be able to hire you, you might as well save my fare. No, you ain't got a chance.
Can't you whistle a tune that's recognizable?
I never could carry one.
Well, then, don't whistle.
Well, I got to do something. I can't just sit.
Then tell me about the Duncans. You say that Mrs. Duncan's an invalid?
Yeah, sure is. Yeah, she's been bedridden for Christ knows how long. It's her heart condition.
And her daughter, Meg?
Well, when I said she wasn't rugged, I didn't mean she was sickly. No. I just meant that she wasn't up to pitching hay or planting potatoes or running a plow. Duncan Place will have to be sold for taxes, like as not. Wesley Duncan didn't leave any insurance. Well, that is, not that I know of. Reckon he hadn't the money to keep up heavy premiums. Well, you know, his death is the biggest thing that ever happened in this neck of the woods. Loads of strangers come our way in the last few weeks. Why, the mansion house has been packed down and running over.
You sound as if you and all the rest of the natives are basking in some sort of reflected glory.
Well, that is just what we are doing. That alarmer, the guy who killed West, showed up, he'd be out of luck.
Meaning?
He would be tarred and feathered at best and lynched at worst. He wouldn't be that much of a fool. To show up, I mean. Yeah, you better brace yourself, mister. This road gets rutty from here on. Oh, excuse me, I forgot.
No, for heaven's sake, whistle if you must.
Oh, well, thank you.
How long will it take us to get to the Duncan farm?
Oh, 20 minutes, more or less. Maybe half an hour or so. You can still turn back, mister.
I can't turn back. I've passed the turning point.
Yeah, it's all right with me. Sure loss, but my gain. Yeah.
It was pitch dark when the jalopy reached the Duncan farmhouse. But there was a light in a lower window, so Tracy climbed out of the taxi and paid the fare and started toward it. He waited, though, until the jalopy had jolted out of hearing before he knocked on the door. After a moment, the door opened.
Miss Duncan?
Yes, I'm Meg Duncan.
My name is Timothy Layton. You don't know me, but may I come in and explain my reason for being here?
Why? Well, yes. Yes, of course.
Thank you.
My mother's just gone to bed, and she sleeps very lightly. Any noise will waken her. This way. There now. Sit down. We've kept the parlor door closed lately because... Well, there's been a death in the family.
So I understand. That's why I'm here, because of your father's death.
Oh, dear. You're another newspaper reporter?
The man who drove me out here asked me the same question. He said you'd been besieged by newspaper chaps, so... Well, let's say, Miss Duncan, that I'm an opportunist.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm a country boy who was taken to the city at a very early age. I'll admit here and now that I don't know the first thing about farming or anything of the rest of it, but I've always had a vague memory of hills turning green in the spring, scarlet in the autumn. The fields of grain, green and gold.
Well, you're here because...
I lost my job the very day your father lost his life. I followed the newspaper accounts. Why? Because I haven't had much else to do, I guess. It occurred to me that two women alone on a farm might need a strong man to do the work. I thought that your need and my need might have a meeting place somewhere.
Thank you for not beating around the bush. Thank you for being so frank, for not saying that you only want to help us. You've wasted your time coming out here, Mr. Layton. We do need somebody to run the farm for us, yes, but we can't afford to pay wages. My father didn't carry any insurance. We have no money.
I want to make you a proposition. I'm 29 now. When I'm 30, I'll come into a legacy. My grandfather left me some money. I'll work for nothing until my legacy's due, and then... Well, perhaps I'll buy part of the farm and go shares with you on production.
This is the strangest proposition I've ever heard.
Don't blame you for thinking so.
I'll take it up with my mother in the morning. She makes our decisions. Sick as she is, she's very clear-headed. And until then... But where will you spend the night, Mr. Layton?
Well, the man who brought me here said something about the mansion house.
Oh, it's way back in the village, opposite the depot. And the nearest motel is 3 miles away, and it's getting late. You may stay the night here, Mr. Layton.
You're taking me on trust?
Why not? Mother and I are at the end of our rope. And besides, you have an honest face.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back.
Over the rostrum of the Memorial Amphitheater in the Arlington National Cemetery are these words. When we assumed the soldier, we did not lay aside the citizen. So whether we're in civilian clothes or in the military uniform of the United States, none of us should forget the right guaranteed to us in the 15th and 19th Amendments of our Constitution. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude or sex. This right to vote forms an important page in your political history.
And now back to our story with Betty Davis.
Tracy slept in a quiet farm bedroom under a patchwork quilt. He waked to the smell of coffee and went down to the kitchen and ate the breakfast Meg Duncan prepared for him. A frail, pretty girl with eyes that were too large for her heart-shaped face and slim hands that were curiously steady. While Tracy was eating, she took a tray to her mother, and later she led him to her mother's bedside. The invalid smiled wanly up at him.
My daughter tells me that your name is Timothy Layton. How do you do, Timothy? My daughter tells me that you'd like to help us in our need.
I would. Not only for your sake, but for my own.
We're sorely in need of help.
Why didn't you take some money from this chap, Lorimer, who was accused of running your husband down? According to the newspaper, he offered you a good sum of money.
If you think we'd accept blood money...
Hush, hush, Meg. We couldn't take any money from him, Timothy. If the man were guilty, it would have been, as Meg said, blood money. If he weren't guilty, it would have been charity. In either circumstances, our hands were tied. Now, lean close and let me look at you. Oh, you have sorrow in your eyes, Timothy. Well, you've come to the right place, to the house of sorrow. We'd be very grateful for your help.
Tracy Lorimer had never worked with his hands, and his only acquaintance with the country was a passing one. But he'd given Meg his alibi in advance. He'd left the country when he was so very young that he couldn't remember the pattern of a farm. Patiently, Meg coached him. When it was time to plant, he'd be prepared, if not expert. One Sunday in early March, she asked him to drive with her to the cemetery.
I'm going to visit my father's grave, Tim. It's so barren now. I'll plant flowers on it soon.
You're sure you want me to come along?
Perfectly sure.
Meg, someday the man who ran your father down will be behind bars.
Not a chance. He's been acquitted. And a man's never tried twice for the same offense.
Can't you find it in your heart to be tolerant? Can't you make yourself believe that Tracy Lorimer was innocent?
No, Tim, I can't. My hatred of Tracy Lorimer keeps me awake nights. It haunts me day. He had money, so he bought his freedom. I hope something dreadful happens to him one day. I hope he'll be paid in full for what he did.
Maybe something is happening to him, Meg. Maybe he's in love with a girl who hates him as much as you do. Maybe his money doesn't mean anything to him now. Why are you frowning at me, Meg?
Because you sound as if you're on Tracy Lorimer's side. I've changed my mind, Tim. It'll be best if you don't drive to the cemetery with me after all.
Arrived, and Tracy felt like a full-fledged farmer as he toiled in the field. And then one day, as he went down the lane to the mailbox near the road, he heard a car rattling along. It stopped, and the familiar voice of the local taxi cab driver called out.
Tim! Hey, Tim!
Scotty, what is it?
Oh, hey, Tim, the city paper come in on the early train. Big news, Tim.
Yes, sir.
They found the guy that done it.
The guy that did what?
That killed Wesley Duncan. Yeah, he done the same thing over again night before last. And they caught him red-handed putting the car right where he found it. Yeah, somebody followed him back without him knowing it. He's made a full confession. Wes Duncan was one of three that he killed. But the fella won't get the chair, though, because he's kind of nutty.
Give me that paper.
Huh?
I want to show it to Mrs. Duncan, to Meg.
No, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Tim. No, I want to get in the news myself.
Meg, holding the newspaper in trembling hands, read the story to her mother. Tracy stood on the other side of Mrs. Duncan's bed listening. And when Meg had come to the end, the sick woman spoke.
You must be very much relieved, Tracy.
I feel as if I've been born again. You called me Tracy.
Yes, I've known for months. Now, don't look at me that way, Meg.
Can you let him stay here when you thought that he was guilty of...
I never thought he was guilty, Meg. His eyes were too sad and his mouth was too gentle.
Those pictures they published. I didn't think anybody could recognize me from those pictures. Not after I shaved my mustache.
I didn't recognize your features, Tracy. When a woman's bedridden, she does a lot of reading. And in one of the whodunits that Meg brought from the library, a detective said that 99 times out of 100, a man uses his own initials when he's choosing an alias. Now that tipped me off in the beginning. Tracy Lorimer, Timothy Layton, T.L. And then, the story about the legacy you'll soon inherit was much too pat. And the matter was clinched when you held off from telling Meg you loved her.
Mother. Oh, Mother.
Well, dear, don't be embarrassed. He can tell you now. Of course, I could close my eyes and pretend to be asleep, but I'd advise you two young people to step into the hall where you'll be just entirely alone.
If we wait long enough, matters come into the open, and the puzzle is no longer a puzzle, and the sailing is clear with no shoals ahead. We may even have a star to guide us. Mr. Briggs, the lawyer who defended Tracy Larimer, was questioned by a junior, Lou Saxon, about the outcome of the trial. Mr. Briggs complimented the young man on the research he'd done. But unfortunately, there came a day in Lou Saxon's life when he had so much money that he lost his enthusiasm for work.
And now here is Betty Davis to tell you more about Lou Saxon.
Lou Saxon forged ahead very rapidly in his chosen profession. But somewhere along the way, he got a wrong perspective on life. You will meet Lou and his wife, Ava, in the midst of a domestic crisis when I bring you their story. Until then, this is Betty Davis saying goodbye from the Whispering Street.
Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast were Dick Trenna, Bill Boucher, Janet Waldo, Sarah Selby, and Forrest Luke. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is George Walsh. Whispering Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.